RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Let's have another Tech Tuesday, shall we, here at RCR with Stephen Sykes. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing? I'm fine, thanks.
I'm very good. I think we've had quite a pile of feedback come in before we get to all the other stuff. Have we?
Oh, we sure do. Yes, we have. So we'll kick off with someone who calls themselves Busy Lizzie and says that the government are spying on us. Huawei.
NASA. We were taught to say it at RNZ. Huawei.
Yeah, that's closer than saying Huawei because of the H. It can be confusing. Huawei and NASA and the police are aiding their little spy network. Remember Ardern telling us they weren't going to use Huawei infrastructure, but then allowed Chris Farfoy to sign us up anyway. Our police were even trained for civilian crowd control by Chinese military. Now Judith Collins, Space Minister, is excited about rubbing shoulders with NASA, allowing them to do all sorts of drone and satellite stuff in our airspace. We were warned years ago, and they provide a link to a New Zealand Herald article written 12 years ago, and this was when there was a perceived fear that using Huawei and ZTE, which is another Chinese telecommunications firm, over fears of spying, corruption, and links to China's military and the government. Well, that was 2012, and what pretty much goes on now is that pretty much everybody's everybody's network equipment is doing some sort of surveillance.
Right, for whatever side.
Yeah. Typically goes to a company and then that can be passed on to a government. And, of course, governments typically don't need warrants for this sort of stuff because the data's been collected anyway by companies. So governments just go up to companies and tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, cough up that information about Joe Bloggs that we're up to. Thanks very much.
Especially when the top guy's in the CCP, probably.
Yes.
Though, thinking about it logically, why wouldn't you spy like that if you could? You create a electronics brand and massively diversified range of products, but very strong in the device and I guess all the protocols and hardware that go with it for comms. Why not build something into it if you could, so you could pick information out of it? I mean, any country would do that.
Yeah, because it's so easy to do.
Yeah, and if you buy it, well, more fool you.
Well, the thing is, you don't necessarily buy it. If you're the the average internet user at home, when your ISP gives you this telecommunications equipment to get you on the internet, and people like me go, well, yeah, no, that ain't happening, and I get my own router and replace the software in it with something free open source that I trust, and you sort of get around all that.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying, but it might sound like an evil empire thing when we think of China, but I mean, if we could do that, we would do that, wouldn't we? Here.
We probably would, yeah. And if we don't now, we would soon be doing it ourselves because everyone else was.
Yeah, because they're all doing it. All right.
Yes.
It's a very interesting one.
Yeah.
Are we done with that?
So the next person asks, can I please repeat the date and time of the talk at the Berlin Center? I sure can. So that was November the 30th from 2 to 4 p.m.
Sweet.
That was a talk from Andy Hurley, and it's in relation to safer technology out here in New Zealand. So, that's at the Berlin Centre, November the 30th on the Saturday.
All right, good. Moving along. Yep.
What are the ramifications of wearing hearing aids as far as EMF goes? I can't live without them.
Beg your pardon?
Well, so, good on you.
Ka-dunk.
Yeah, I saw that coming. So a lot of hearing aids tend to have Bluetooth features, so you can connect to your phone and things like that. Bluetooth LE or Bluetooth Low Energy is very small amounts of EMF, and that's typically how a lot of people would like say that it's okay, but it's a little bit all the time.
Yeah.
So if you
cumulative exposure.
It's think of it like water slowly wearing away rock.
Yeah, cutting a channel.
Yes.
Over time.
But if you're able to make Andy Hooley's presentation or the Zoom link when it's released close to the time, he'll talk more about that.
All right.
I presume.
Good. Yep. Yep.
Cool. So this next one, don't Faraday cages need to be earthed? I used to work in a neuroscience lab where there was a small room with solid metal walls, supposed to act as a Faraday cage to screen all EMF that didn't come from the tissues being studied.
Right.
But cell phones still worked inside that room. This was eventually fixed by earthing the shielding.
Ah, interesting.
Turns out that no, Faraday cages do not need to be earthed.
Well, what would the problem have been there then, I wonder?
I think there must have been something else that was possibly done, because if you've only got metal walls, that by itself isn't enough.
Right.
Because you're forgetting about the floor, you're forgetting about the ceiling.
Okay, yep.
I see. And with phones, you are, you're wrapping them, smothering them with something like a foil.
Yep.
So they don't need to be earthed. And I've seen people do demonstrations with Faraday cages, because the idea is that the electrical energy goes on the outside of the cage and builds up there. If you then touch the cage, then the energy, depending on how much it is, will then go through you.
Okay, so you've got to keep your bodily bits away from the edge of the cage, or the actual cage inside of the cage.
Yes, but if you then ground the cage, then you're okay.
Oh, okay.
But it won't help in terms of preventing EMF from coming in.
Try doing that in a prepper's panic.
Yeah.
Try to remember all of that now. Do I have to earth it? Do I have to earth it here? All right. Yeah. That answers that.
It does. So somebody said, listen to Tech Tuesday and mention of Robocop. What about the 1980s movie with Tom Selleck and it had those robot vacuum cleaners? I remember that. It's called Runaway. So Tom Selleck's character, he was the police officer. I'm not sure the division in the police that he was in, but he basically investigated the robots that tended to run away. And the movie opens up where he goes into a residential house and the robot vacuum cleaner manages to get hold of a gun. And it's lost the plot, and it sort of goes on a bit of a rampage. And they go and chase other machinery throughout the movie that goes haywire, to discover that there's this bad guy, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible Dr. Evil type.
Yes, yeah, with the evil-looking steer who is infiltrating machinery with customized chips to do it. And he's got this special gun that can, when you fire it, the round targets the person and goes around corners and, until it reaches the target. It's actually quite a good movie.
That's quite futuristic.
Yeah, although probably not too far away.
No, but for its time. So how old's that? 30, 40 years?
Oh, I can't remember the year. Was it? I'm guessing 85.
Oh, well, in that ballpark. Okay. Yeah, but Robocop is an absolute classic. Yep.
Yes.
What else have we got?
Last one for today. Rachel writes in to say, hi, guys. I was charged for 4 1-kilogram blocks of cheese the other day when I only purchased 3. When I went back a week later, I took my receipt and told them. They took my receipt as it is time stamped, and they told me they would go back through the footage to see how many I had really purchased. So they are obviously recording everything and keeping it. I guess it can help in some circumstances to prove you are right, but it still doesn't seem good. Thanks for all you do, Rachel.
Okay. In the weekend, I was doing shopping at a supermarket and doing, the self-checkout. And it got hung up on something, and the poor person had to come over for the 50 millionth time today in a shift probably to reset it. As he was resetting it, it flashed up a picture from above, and I could see me looking directly down at me right over the, the area of the self-checkout.
Yeah.
And it kind of revealed a bit of a behind-the-scenes look into every machine has, unless you've got a very distinctive balding pattern, it's going to be difficult to identify the individual because it's from top down. But everything's there, all the items you can see. And so they're doing it. It's happening every transaction that's happening. What happens? Do you think they record that? They must record that.
Oh, yeah, they have to, because as Rach reports, you know, they were going to go back in time. And this was a week later.
Yeah. So how long does that hang around, even as a still frame, not video coverage footage?
Yes, that's one of the important pertinent questions, you know, data retention, how long are you keeping it for?
Anyway, I don't think I was meant to see that.
Yeah.
And he covered it up pretty quick. You know, he reset it pretty quick after that. All right. So that's our feedback. Let's go to a couple of newsy items before we go to our main topic, and that is the epocalypse. Looking forward to finding out about that. What's the Chemist Warehouse been doing?
So they've launched a QR code system to pay by bank, and the point of this is to try and dodge card surcharges.
Right.
And they're doing this under a partnership with fintech firm Wave, that's spelled with two A's. And so they're putting QR codes around the shop so that you can scan those, and that's how you can pay for stuff. And I immediately think, oh, that's a good way to, and I can't remember the term for it, but when you stick fake QR codes on top of other QR codes in order to, like, scam people, was the first thing that popped
into my head.
You
could walk around and put little stickers over all their ones.
Yeah, you could.
We're not trying to give anyone ideas, by the way.
No, this is other people have already had these ideas anyway.
Yeah, of course. I've seen some news about that recently. But it's so easily done, isn't it? Even if it only lasts for a few minutes or 20 minutes.
Yeah. So this was to try and sort of get around the banks taking their merchant fees. And in fact, in New Zealand, I think it was 2022, legislation changed so that a retailer could pass on to the consumer merchant fees. So, you know, if you've gone up to card machines and you see a sellotape notice saying that there's a 1.5% fee and things like that.
Yep.
So that's the retailer passing it on to you. And so that sort of puts you off using things like PayWave, because that's all credit cards, because that's where
You pay some dollars for not having to move your arm an extra few centimetres.
Pretty much.
I mean, that's what that is. Let's be real.
And pushing some buttons on a keypad.
Oh, I can't. It's too much. Too much effort.
The Albanese government is trying to ban debit card surcharging from the beginning of 2026. That is pending further consultation with the Reserve Bank of Australia. But, of course, this does not mean necessarily that customers are going to see lower prices, because the Chemist Warehouse does have a low price, high volume model of selling.
But still, the banks won't like that.
No, they won't.
And retailers of scale, like the Chemist Warehouse, they could save themselves a lot of money.
Yes.
Doing it that way, because they've got thousands of products. Thousands.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Police cleared to tap into private cameras. What you mean here in New Zealand?
Yes. So there was a report on Radio New Zealand's website late October. So police have been given legal clearance to continue tapping into private cameras. And they've been doing so more than 200 times a year to collect evidence. This is through a company called Aura. I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, we've heard of them before. We were talking with the head of consumer in New Zealand about this. Yeah, that company has, in fact, there's a conflict of interest because the police use their service to do the archiving, but also they are the service that they have to go to get hold of anything outside the police archive. So, yet one's the client and one's the customer, and obviously the customer's a great customer, being the New Zealand police, so you wonder how it works, you know?
Yes, so this is absolutely what you put into the thin end of the wedge stuff, the frog boiling in the water. Records have shown that officers tap into the system more than 600 times a day, into their platform, the Aurora's platform that has camera stills and video. And there's between 5,000 and 10,000 cameras around the country that connect into their system. And they say they are using it mostly for combat shoplifting and retail crime. I thought we had bigger problems.
Yeah, but the police have got a natural interest in that. So, again, where are the conflicted interests between privacy and police accessibility to this sort of information?
Well, this is the kind of conversation we need to be having as the public.
Yeah.
I mean, there are 6,000 staff can access the networks for routine non-tracking searches. So that's like identifying the owner of a car, like in a supermarket or, you know, buying fuel. And 1,000 of those have an extra authority. It's 1,000 extra people that have the authority to get the information for more invasive tracking of vehicles from place to place. And automatically I'm thinking, well, in the fullness of time, then as the thin end of that wedge gets thicker, then you make a whole bunch of those people redundant and employ an AI to have those decisions made automatically and autonomously.
Okay, well, it's interesting, that development. All right, let's go to the main topic in this Tech Tuesday, the apocalypse. What the?
Yes, the apocalypse. So, okay, we have to go back in time, pun intended. So the Unix operating system and Linux, because it's its close cousin, the date and time is measured from what's called the epoch. The epoch is midnight on the 1st of January 1970. So this is sort of when Unix time was born, and it was arbitrarily selected by Unix programmers, and they needed a uniform date for the start time. So on most computer platforms, Unix time is a 32-bit signed integer, and it details the number of non-leap seconds that have gone on since the epoch began on the 1st of January 1970. Now, at the time, in 1970, this seemed like a good idea. After all, computer memory was pretty expensive back then. However, 1 second after 14 minutes past 3 in the morning, 7 seconds, UTC, on the 19th of January, 2038, the date and time will wrap around to 8:45 p.m. and 52 seconds, 13th of December, in the year 1901, and start counting up from there again.
Oh.
This is known as the apocalypse.
Okay.
So we've kind of been here before. Some people think the Y2K problem was a load of rubbish, as everything seemed to keep going. We got closer to the millennium, more businesses took notice. 1987, the New York Stock Exchange hired a team of around 100 programmers to future-proof against the upcoming Y2K issue. But it wasn't until the mid-1990s that programmers really started pulling their finger out and getting on with it. It was helped along by the US government and its year 2000 Information and Readiness Disclosure Act. And it even formed a President's Council of Senior Officials from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to monitor preparedness of private companies. And this all started, of course, because computers back then were just storing dates as a two-digit number. And the century part was always missing. So anything past the 31st of December 1999 would roll around to the year 00. And software and hardware needed to be adapted to this to fix this problem. And I remember having to sort this out for an organization in 1999. And it wasn't helped when companies like Microsoft, in November of 1999, kept sending out CDs or software updates on them, because that's how you got software updates in the mail on a CD.
I remember those days.
Yes, and another thing you had to do too is that a lot of the computer hardware wasn't Y2K ready, so you could either buy a new machine or you could buy cards that you could plug in. I remember buying a whole bunch of them from Dick Smith, and they took over and they became the new hardware that kept measurement of
the... Is that the clock, essentially, the clock?
That's the clock. It's, yeah. It's the real-time clock.
Yep.
So, and they have a battery on them, so when you shut the machine off, they still measure time.
Right.
Even though the power's gone. So, of course, legacy media dismissed this all as a hoax, but that's only because people worked their asses off to make sure everything was as ready as it could be. I mean, however, some financial systems failed when January 1st, 1999 rolled around because they'd attempted to make financial predictions for the year ahead, but they couldn't even handle 1999. And I recall, for some bizarre reason, the media were so concerned whether or not their toasters would continue to work. And I recall watching Paul Holmes interview somebody, and he was asking that very question about toasters, whether or not they would work.
Okay, I don't know the relevance of toasters.
No.
I mean, there are plenty of other appliances as well. Was that the thinking that certain appliances would not operate because of something in their chip?
Yes, but I guess so. But if
toasters?
Yes, exactly. Toasters is just a metal filament heating up some bread. It doesn't care what the time is or the date.
But everybody can relate to them, Stephen. That's why everyone can relate to a toaster.
No, that's probably... Well, I don't know. I can't relate to a toaster very well, personally speaking.
I remember Get Smart, yes. And the robot Jaime. He didn't fall in love with the toaster, but he fell in love with the phone, remember? fall in love with the toaster after that. Okay.
But back to the apocalypse.
Yep, the epocalypse.
Yep. So this is not an easy problem to fix because we have many more computer systems now than we're ever used to. And it's a particular concern for a variety of embedded systems, particularly aircraft. Databases are of a particular concern because they tend to hang around for a very long time. And you can have issues with legacy programming code trying to deal with dates past the apocalypse. And if you don't get this kind of thing right, you can end up creating the very problem you're trying to avoid. And then you've also got file systems on your computer operating systems that store all your files. However, the good news is that virtually all operating systems now run on 64-bit hardware and represent the date, time, and 64-bit integers. So when you have a 32-bit system, you can double the number of numbers you can represent by going to 33 bits. That's the way that the binary system works. Now, depending on how you view time in the universe itself, shifting to a 64-bit system to represent the date and time, this doesn't solve the problem. It just postpones the problem into the future to the year 292,277,026,596. Well, but I'm not going to care, but that's just me being selfish.
You know, in infinite time, that flashes by.
Yeah, yeah. When you're busy doing stuff, time just
disappears. Before you know it, 200 and... whatever, a quadzillion parsecs have gone past.
But, I mean, given that a lot of systems that are used today probably will be deprecated within the next 14 years by the time 2048 rolls around.
And isn't it just easier just to buy new stuff?
For you as a consumer, probably yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're not aware of all this, the background work that programmers are putting into place, particularly computer systems where data is stored and you still want that to be available after the year 2038.
Without having to copy it all and, yeah, okay.
But we've kind of had this problem before a little bit. So a few other examples where these numbers have overflowed and rolled around. If you cast your mind back, almost 10 years actually, 2014, when you got song Gangnam Style, if that was the harbinger of the apocalypse in 2014, when YouTube's 32-bit counter popped its cogs when his music video was set to go over 2.1 billion views.
Because, okay, they hadn't figured for such a large number of views.
Yeah, so that was basically it. So when they made YouTube, they didn't think, well, who's going to watch something 2.1 billion times. Well, it turns out that particular song was the first to do it.
Yeah, that was amazing that it was that song.
Yeah.
Something about it. I don't know what it, well, I think I know what it had. It had something, but yeah, that one.
Had a catch. That one. It certainly had a catchiness to it.
Sure did.
And then we had on 32-bit Android phones with version 13 or older, they tended to crash if the date was set past the 19th of January 2038. In 2016, a bug was discovered in Apple's iPhone that would brick the phone if the date was set to epoch time, in other words, the 1st of January 1970, and then they released a patch to fix it. And then going even further back, Donkey Kong on the Nintendo Entertainment System, that used an 8-bit number, which means you can represent a maximum of 256 values. And this was used to store the time left on any level to play the game.
And I can see how that could cause a problem.
Yes. So the time was calculated by multiplying what level number you were on by 10 and then adding 40. So when the player reaches level 22, 260 is calculated, and that wraps around to 4 seconds, which makes it impossible to complete the level in 4 seconds. And
okay, that would have a few annoyed punters.
Just a little.
From that, yeah.
And then players of Grand Theft Auto 5 were limited to collecting a maximum of $2.1 billion for their criminal behaviors, and if they tried to accumulate any more money, their cash was wrapped around to a negative value, which kind of wiped it all out.
Which is not an incentive in the game, is it?
No, you'd have to, like, give away money. I mean, I've never played the game ever, so...
No. It'd be like, and as, you know, the value of money goes down, it's like $2 billion.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that all? That's what they gave this week to Ukraine, you know.
Yeah. The exact number is 2,147,483,647. So as soon as you got another dollar, it's gone.
Wow. All right. Any more on the epocalypse?
No, I think that's probably a good nerd dump about time. We'll probably be fine because we've known about this issue for a long time, and a lot of good work has been going towards making sure that we don't have another Y2K. We've got time.
Okay.
To fix time.
All right, our time's flown away. Yeah, our time's flown away. So we'll have another Tech Tuesday in a week. Thank you, Stephen.
Sounds good to me. We'll see you then.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.